everybody, welcome back to another week at the Damage Report. I'm John Idarola. It's Monday, and so Brooke is here.
Yes, I'm here. I'm glad to be here. Thank you.
As always, both on camera and working with us every day.
Yes,
behind the scenes as well.
So much fun.
You know what else is going to be fun?
What?
Next weekend. But before then, we have to get through the week.
Okay.
And that involves a lot of shows. And on today's show, we've got a lot of stuff we're going to be talking about. We're going to talk about, I don't know if it's sort of like a silver lining or recognizing heroism in the tragic shooting in New Zealand that happened last year. We want to recognize a few different people in that. We also have over the weekend, President 25th Amendment has degraded further. He doesn't want to talk about white supremacy, white nationalism. He does have some things he wants to talk about.
Right.
And so we are going to delve into that morass. A little bit later on, an investigation shows that multiple members of different branches of the US Armed Forces are apparently participating in sort of white nationalist, white identity Discord chat. That's scary.
It's a shocking story.
It is. It's not totally shocking, but
we know
I think
possible,
it's important.
But
yes.
The details are.
Yes. Yeah. And we have two awesome guests who are going to be joining us a little bit later on. So near the end of the show, David Dorson is going to be joining us to break down the college admissions scandal, what we can expect to come from this both immediately and how much further might this spread. Mm-hmm. And then in the next block, actually, this is not something we normally do, but if you watch the show, you know that I am a gigantic board gaming enthusiast. And so we're going to be having on Elizabeth Hargrave, the designer of the incredibly hyped and much anticipated Wingspan, a very scientifically founded board game that we're going to talk about a little bit later on.
I'm so excited to watch you conduct this interview.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's going to be interesting. I mean, at least the way you've broken it down to me, I think there are a lot of interesting things about this that I'm excited to hear, but it is fun to watch your excitement about certain things.
I mean, here's the thing, and this is something like what Jacori was talking about off camera before the show. Things don't become mainstream unless people who like them talk about them.
I'm with that.
So I'm gonna do that.
All right. Okay? This is a good thing. Science, it's a good thing to become more mainstream.
It is, especially in 2019. Maybe some respect for science wouldn't be a bad thing. But before that, why don't we jump into the news? When terror attacks happen, it is very natural for us to focus on the villains, the person or persons who conducted the attack, those like in the case of New Zealand who weighed in an incredibly offensive and oftentimes Islamophobic way. We do that. That's what we do as a culture. But there are good people. There are people who are trying to make things better, and even during the attack, acting with incredible bravery and heroism. And so we want to recognize a few people from that attack who were forced into this position of becoming heroes, even if universally they don't see themselves that way. To outsiders, that is certainly how it appears. And the first is a man named Abdul Aziz. So he actually helped to drive the attacker off from one of the mosques that he was attacking at enormous risk to his own life. So the gunman arrived and advanced towards the mosque, killing people in his path as he went. This individual, Abdul Aziz, picked up a nearby credit card machine and ran outside yelling, "Come here." So he was literally trying to draw the gunman away so that he would not go inside of the mosque. Aziz engaged the gunman in a cat and mouse chase outside the mosque and later grabbed one of the shooter's own guns that had been tossed to the ground. Aziz, at the time, four sons of his and dozens of others remained in the mosque. He went back, he went to the back, picked up the gun, found that there were no bullets left in it. The shooter then returned to get a different gun from his car. That's when Aziz ran to the car and threw the gun, in his words, like an arrow at the windshield of the shooter's car, shattering it and apparently scaring the shooter enough that he drove off and possibly saved who knows how many lives inside of the mosque. It's just like every word of that is amazing.
Yeah.
Everybody likes to think that they would act with courage, but he apparently didn't even think about it. He just thought, there's people inside, I have to save them, and he acted.
Yeah, that is some like superhuman courage. That's not even basic courage.
Yeah.
That, I mean, just the ability to step outside of your own fear and concern for safety to protect others.
Yeah,
physically.
It's amazing.
Yeah, it was
and
amazing.
He says that he doesn't see himself as a hero. He says that he didn't save those people, God saved those people. And he also said, you don't have much time to think. Whatever you think of, you just do it, you know. I just wanted to save as much lives as I could, even if I lose my life.
And he had four kids inside, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
That is amazing. That is, oh God. And obviously, we don't want anyone to ever be put into that position.
No,
but there are great people. And additionally, I want to recognize there were a couple of visiting police officers in the area who were instrumental in stopping the guy as he was driving away. So Senior Sergeant Pete Stills of the area told the New Zealand Herald the two officers who were visiting from a rural Canterbury station had correctly suspected the suspect would use routes that skirted the city. Coming across the guy's car, they pursued and rammed the vehicle, immobilizing it. Mm-hmm. And again, like, look, in that case, they're ramming their car into another car. But also, they had every reason to believe that that guy had countless guns on him.
Right.
And so by engaging with him in that way and stopping his car, they were, again, risking their own lives too.
People, yeah, putting their own lives at risk with a killer.
Yeah.
To save other lives.
It's just incredible.
Like, being able to even think like that. Yeah, it's amazing.
Exactly. And there was an additional man, a Pakistani man named Naeem Rashid, who died trying to tackle the shooter in one of the mosques. He is going to be honored with a national award, according to the Prime Minister of Pakistan. Rashid, originally from Pakistan, was, quote, badly wounded in the attack on the Al Noor Mosque after he tried overpowering the shooter. Mm-hmm. So again, I mean, like, we like to imagine that even without a weapon, like the first individual we talked about had a hand credit card scanner. This individual had no weapon whatsoever, but we're still willing to try to stop this person.
Right. There's, you know, these people just outside of, you know, losing the lives of their family members, their friends, and almost like the security that you have in your place of worship. But, you know, even afterwards, you know, while the police have to investigate, they don't get to, you know, go forward with the traditions of their culture, of their religion, and they don't get to bury the bodies like in the way that they would like to within 24 hours. There's just so many, and that is, you know, obviously like an unintentional like abuse while police have to investigate. But I just, you know, your heart goes out to all of these people.
Yeah. Yeah, just incredible. And obviously, I mean, as you said, like there are people who are still awaiting being able to bury their loved ones. The community is obviously not, I mean, they've barely recovered at all in the past few days. But at the same time, it's just amazing. There are some people who were trying to limit the damage as much as they possibly could and likely saved a lot of lives while doing so.
Yeah.
Let's talk about Egg Boy.
Okay.
So there's a good chance that over the weekend you saw video. Let's take a look at Egg Boy.
Okay.
Attacked in their own.
So in that you saw Australian politician Fraser Anning having an egg smashed on his head and responding as any adult should. When an egg is smashed on their head by a child, immediately trying to viciously assault that person.
Punching a kid.
And obviously we're being sarcastic. So look, Fraser Anning, by the way, I want to take this time to mention that this particular politician who had the egg smashed on his head, we incorrectly identified the country he's a politician from on Friday's show as being New Zealand rather than Australia. Which many people noticed, and I just want to apologize if anyone was offended or felt like we were in any way maligning New Zealand. That was not, of course, our intention whatsoever. The only reason we were talking about the story was to attack that politician for what he was doing and how heartless he was being in light of the tragedy that had just happened.
Right.
But I certainly do apologize. Over the weekend, I posted apologies on Facebook and Twitter and YouTube, but you never know where people are going to see things or not see them. So for those of you who are watching the video live, I also want you to know that we do apologize for that mistake. The politician, though, is an absolutely awful person. In the wake of the attack, he blamed the victims for their own murder.
A horrible, like, Islamophobic speech he gave, blaming
an official statement.
Right, it was disgusting, right?
It was absolutely disgusting. He wanted to make sure that he was on the record as saying these people who were killed, they are to blame for it.
Mm-hmm.
And now some people are trying to say that, we'll call it even. Yes, he said that people deserve to be murdered, but this guy put an egg on his head. And I saw that former Superman, was it Dean Cain? Is that his name? Posted on Twitter, I would have knocked that kid out. Oh, you're a big man. You're a superhero still, decades later. Superhero for wanting to punch that kid in the face. So look, regardless of what you think about what he did, it was he does not like this politician.
Right. And he acted like a 17-year-old.
Will Connolly, by the
way. I imagine would act. I'm not saying, I don't think that was a good kind of way to behave. He's a teenager who did something dumb.
Yeah. Look, hypothetically, in the abstract, I don't like it, but it's one of the worst politicians ever currently operating in the world. So I'm not going to spare too much sympathy for him. Anyway, there is some good that will come of this, though, because after Twitter nicknamed him Egg Boy, a GoFundMe was created to help him raise legal funds. As of this morning, it had raised over $50,000, actually. Now, the thing is, he has no interest in actually profiting off of this, especially because technically, he committed a crime, and so he is going to need legal funds for that. But he wants the money to go to the victims.
Right.
And so they're continuing to raise money. So regardless of what you think of the egg or egg boy, he is trying to help out in this case and is raising a significant amount of money for people who are desperately going to need it.
Yeah.
Can we just jump to the last graphic just to see the little mural? I saw this on Twitter posted by Alice Workman. It's street art in Hosier Lane, Melbourne. Showing the actual incident that was made very quickly after the actual event.
Wow.
Just a couple of days later, actually. But obviously, this is something that, again, regardless of what you think about what he did, people are obviously very tense about, you know, people like Fraser Anning being so open in their hatred for these communities and feeling
that's the
so protected
that helped. You know, radicalize the person who committed this act.
That sort of speech.
And kind of making that okay. I think also separate from this, because I talked about like this is a 17-year-old kid. He did something stupid. I don't think it's a very teenager thing to give away $50,000 that you just come across. So that's pretty cool.
Awesome. Anytime you can, regardless of the circumstances, if you can do some good, we should recognize that. We're going to take our first break, though. When we come back, we've got much more to get to, so stick around.
We need to talk about a relatively new show called Un the Republic, or UNFTR. As a Young Turks fan, you already know that the government, the media, and corporations are constantly peddling lies that serve the interests of the rich and powerful. But now there's a podcast dedicated to unraveling those lies, debunking the conventional wisdom. In each episode of Un the Republic, or UNFTR, the host delves into a different historical episode or topic that's generally misunderstood or purposely obfuscated by the so-called powers that be, featuring in-depth research, razor-sharp commentary, and just the right amount of vulgarity. The UNFTR podcast takes a sledgehammer to what you thought you knew about some of the nation's most sacred historical cows. But don't just take my word for it. The New York Times described UNFTR as consistently compelling and educational, aiming to challenge conventional wisdom and upend the historical narratives that were taught in school. For as the great philosopher Yoda once put it,
"You must unlearn what you have learned."
And that's true whether you're in Jedi training or you're uprooting and exposing all the propaganda and disinformation you've been fed over the course of your lifetime. So search for UNFDR in your podcast app today and get ready to get informed, angered, and entertained all at the same time.
Despite the fact that they have been selling like crazy for literally years now, board games are still not considered a mainstream sort of thing. You don't see them talked about very commonly. And that is why I was very surprised to see a reference in the New York Times to the much anticipated upcoming board game Wingspan, a game that I recently got the chance to play, talked about in the New York Times and the Smithsonian and a number of other high profile publications. And I thought, wow, this is really something. I have got to reach out to the designer. And that designer now joins us on the show, Elizabeth Hargrave. Welcome to the Damage Report.
Hi, John. How are you?
I'm good and very happy to talk to you about this game. It is possibly one of the most hyped games of 2019. But it is especially interesting and I think noteworthy that you've designed a game that is a deep strategic game that people are really anticipating, but that has a lot of science in it. It is a game about birds. So why birds? Why so much science in your game?
I mean, the original inspiration for Wingspan is that a lot of the popular board games are about things that I'm not actually particularly interested in. So I have been gaming since about 2005, and there are a lot of games about castles and space. just in a conversation about it with some friends of mine, started talking about what if there were games about things that we were more interested in, which for my particular group of friends is mostly nature. And I've been a birder for a long time. So I started thinking about, you know, what are things that go on in nature and the lives of birds that could be turned into a game? So whereas in a lot of games, you're collecting lumber and rocks and things to build things, what if you were collecting berries and seeds and things that birds eat?
Yeah, and worms and rats.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
So first of all, I noticed some of my favorite games in the shop behind you. So I like your collection already. And look, I totally agree. Some of my favorite games, I'm going to keep it real, are about spaceships and zombies and elves and things like that. And yet, when you look over the past couple of decades, the games that have sold the best, games like Settlers of Catan or Pandemic or Ticket to Ride or Dominion, these are, well, Dominion is more of an edge case, but they're generally games about the real world or at least something recognizable. And now we see that again with your game. Do you think that we might be seeing more of a trend in the direction of making games that might have more broad appeal than just, you know, chopping an orc's head off or something like that?
I do, and you mentioned Pandemic, and I think that was a real turning point because it is so real world. And I think we've seen that was a really an innovation in theme, and I think we've seen a real blossoming in the last several years since then of things coming out. So in the nature-y realm, you've got things like Arboretum and Photosynthesis that did really well, which are both about trees. And Evolution, which is behind me, that's about animals gaining different traits. So you're definitely seeing a lot more different games and people feeling like it can innovate a little bit. And I hope that Wingspan is some inspiration around that too, because when I first started playtesting it, I got a lot of feedback from people, not all the time, but occasionally people would say to me, wow, to pitch this to a publisher, you're really going to have to find a more traditional theme. No one's going to publish a game about birds. And I think we're proving them wrong.
Well, yeah, and that, look, I sort of get why people might be apprehensive, but that person was massively wrong, because not only is it a very interesting game with great mechanics, but it also, as people can see in that video, incredibly visually appealing. What they might have noticed in that video as well is the cards are unique birds. Each one includes scientific information about the literal wingspan of the birds, where they can be found, some facts about them. I learned interesting stuff about their nicknames. Was educating people about this subject one of your main goals, or was that just something that you also slipped in after mainly just wanting the game to be a solid game?
I'd say it's more slipped in. I mean, there are definitely educational games about birds out there that are more like trivia games where you have to memorize the information about the birds. And my goal was always to have it be a good game but not to require anyone to actually know anything about the birds or to remember any of the information that they're seeing. So it's not educational in that sense where you're forced to take the information in. It's more that you might just accidentally learn things about birds while you're playing this otherwise good game.
So look, there are a number of female board game designers who've designed great games, but I've generally noticed when people are talking about designers, it feels like the contributions of generally non-white male board game designers aren't recognized quite as much. But you have designed the biggest game, at least so far in 2019, and look, what I want is more inclusion and diversity in the hobby, you know, at large. And the designer side of that is certainly a part. Do you think that the hobby is moving in the direction of more inclusion and diversity?
I do think so. And there's going to be several more games that come out this year from women designers that I hope are going to make a big splash. I know Alice Davis has a game called Dinos Not Assembled that's coming out next week on Kickstarter. Erica Boyaris has a game coming out later this year. And there's several women that have huge name games coming out, but because they're not American, we don't always hear about them in the US. So like Inca Brand designs in partnership with her husband all the time. They've done a bunch of the exit games that are sort of escape rooms in a box style games, as well as games like Village. Time Stories, if people have heard of that one, is co-designed by a woman. but we don't hear their names, and they aren't, you know, they don't speak English as their first language, so we don't always hear interviews with them in the American market.
Well, and look, I guess to prove your point, I have played multiple modules in Time Stories, and I did not know that, actually. So right. They can do a better job right. of publicizing this sort of thing. Elizabeth, I want to thank you for joining the show. And also, I got a chance over the weekend to play your game for the first time and very much enjoyed it. So thank you both for the design of the game and also for joining us today.
Thanks so much for having me.
We're going to take a short break here. We come back, lots more to get to. Stick around. Donald Trump is an alpha male, and the way that you know he's an alpha male is that he spent his weekend attacking a politician who couldn't respond because he died last August. Yes, Donald Trump's feud with John McCain continues long after John McCain has passed on from this world. With Donald Trump tweeting this weekend, spreading the fake and totally discredited dossier is, quote, unfortunately, a very dark stain against John McCain. That's what Ken Starr said, because he turns to Ken Starr.
Right. Ken Starr,
an awful, awful guy who looks comparatively better because he's in the same sentence as Donald Trump. But he went on to say he had far worse stains than this, including thumbs down on repeal and replace after years of campaigning to repeal and replace. So there he's saying it should be considered a stain. One of the last great things that John McCain did was voting against that bill. And let's just small little detour.
Okay.
There are little things that people say and do that I probably focus too much on, but that give you a through line to their ignorance, stupidity, and insanity. And it's for him in this, it's including thumbs down on repeal. He keeps saying that because he remembers, obviously, it was symbolic. It was that John McCain came up and gave the thumbs down. Him giving the thumbs down was an interesting thing that happened at the time. Mm-hmm. It doesn't matter now. He voted against it. That's right. What matters. But this guy with his tiny addled little mind keeps saying thumbs down on it because he thinks as a child does. Anyway, look, him deciding to attack on social media with his more than 50 million followers, John McCain, who is dead and obviously can't defend himself, bothered some people, including people that I normally don't have much time for. But I can understand why they take it personally, including Meghan McCain, who responded with, "No one will ever love you the way they loved my father. I wish I had been given more Saturdays with him. Maybe spend yours with your family instead of on Twitter obsessing over mine." Which again, I don't really like Meghan McCain. I disagree with her on virtually everything. And we had a video last week where we were attacking her for her comments on, well, 2 weeks ago on climate change, last week on education. Because she's on The View and I don't really understand why. But in this particular case, it's not bad advice. Maybe spend a little bit of time with your very large family rather than just downing fast food and tweeting constantly about everybody you don't like.
Where you have a child who's like still a kid. Like, I mean, there's stuff to do.
Hypothetically.
Right.
If you liked your kids, you could spend some time with them.
Also,
I think there's still time to salvage Don Jr. That kid needs a dad.
Like, I get it that this was all kind of inspired by the Ken Starr interview that happened, but you could have just ignored it. The rest of us did. And so, like, if the argument is that he's so mad at John McCain for spreading this dossier, you're spreading something that people haven't really been talking about.
Yeah.
Now you are talking about it.
I wasn't talking about the dossier.
Like, no, not you. Like,
no, that's what I'm saying. Like, nobody was except him.
Yeah, nobody was talking about it. So now you're talking about it. Now you're spreading what you don't want to be talking. It's just, this wasn't smart.
If you think that he could have avoided making the first comment, wait to get a load of the more recent one. Because of course he continued to beat a dead senator by retweeting Lori Hendry, who said, "Meghan McCain took a swipe at Trump suggesting no one will ever love you the way they love my father. Wrong, Meghan. Millions of Americans truly love President Trump, not McCain. I'm one. We hated McCain for his ties to the Russia dossier and his vote against repealing Obamacare." By the way, I wish that I didn't know who Lori Hendry is. I mean, I don't really,
right.
And yet I do. Do you guys know how many, is this offensive? How many middle-aged blonde ladies respond to everything Trump says? That's what they are, and they have big followings. They're way more popular on Twitter than I am, despite the fact that they don't actually do anything. They just respond affirmatively to everything Trump says. Lori Hendry, there's a bunch. Click on literally anything Trump has tweeted.
A name for that, like just like the people like
grifters.
In his replies.
Yeah, look, there's versions of that on the other side too, but there's a lot of blonde 30 to 45 year old women who are just like, that's my president, best president. Anyway, the point of the tweet was your dad's dead, but people love Trump more, which is cool and classy. And Donald Trump then tweeted again about John McCain, calling him last in his class, John McCain.
Wasn't last in his class. He was like fifth to last.
Yeah, apparently John McCain didn't agree with his class. I would say at this point, after he's dead, probably not super relevant, especially when Don, dude, we know from your former lawyer that you dispatched people to make sure that we never got your transcripts, which isn't generally what you do when you're valedictorian.
I think,
honestly,
like not even having to like break down the ridiculousness of like and the lie. It was a lie in the tweet, and that you know he's attacking this person for 2 days, and he's dead. And should there be respect or this or that? I just think that we could probably all agree that this activity, this behavior, is beneath the office of the president.
Well, or it was at one point.
Okay.
Now
be.
It's now this is actually preferable.
Okay.
No.
Like this
anyway,
is
I want to give.
I don't know. This is.
I know. The thing is, somebody pointed out on Twitter, like you have a position where you can go anywhere, you can talk to anyone,
right.
You can learn anything. Secrets that the U.S. government has been hiding, Donald Trump has access to. He could go wandering around the basement of
just
the CIA.
Read.
Yeah. Well, I mean, yeah, in general. But I'm saying he has unique access to virtually any information in the world. He can pursue almost anything. If he decided that he wanted to fix the pipes in Flint tomorrow, he could do it. He could allocate the money and he could do it. Instead, he is attacking John McCain. I just want to briefly play Meghan McCain this morning on The View responding to it. Because, look, maybe I just take this kind of extra personally because my dad passed years ago. And so I take the whole unnecessary cheap shots at dad's thing sort of personally. Anyway, here is Meghan McCain talking about it.
Listen, he spends his weekend obsessing over great men because he knows it and I know it and all of you know it. He will never be a great man.
No.
Yeah.
No.
And so he is my father was his kryptonite in life.
Yeah.
He's his kryptonite in death. On a personal level, I agree with you. All of us have love and families. And when my father was alive up until adulthood, we would spend our time together cooking, hiking, fishing, really celebrating life. And I think it's because he almost died. Mm-hmm. And I just thought, your life is spent on your weekends, not with your family,
yeah.
not with your friends, but obsessing,
yeah.
obsessing over great men you could never live up to.
Yeah. Yeah.
That tells you everything you need to know about his pathetic life
yeah.
right
yeah.
now.
Yes. So, look, after this video, I'm going to go back to disagreeing as aggressively as possible with her on virtually every issue, fundamentally not understanding why she's on The View in the first place, and also thinking that John McCain was not a perfect person. Obviously, I disagreed for years in media, but I don't need to obsess over it on a random Saturday. And the main reason I wanted to mention this was I wanted to put a pin in this to be able to refer back to it. In future years, there is going to come a time, probably won't be that long considering the filets of fish, that Donald Trump will pass from this world. And we will be told by many people, hey, respect the recently deceased.
Right.
Don't pop a bottle over Don passing on. He just set the precedent.
So can I just say, like, to be fair, he doesn't spend weekends with his family because he spends weekdays with them. Because as you'll remember, he gave them all jobs in the White House.
That's true.
The smarter one
anyway.
Right.
So. Yeah, that's true. That's its own problem for him, but that
right,
is true.
Right.
And look, this is, I'm gonna keep it real. This is not part of a video, by the way. This is just between the videos. But this is a self-indulgent show for me. I literally was talking about board games a few minutes ago. So I'm gonna do this too.
Even though it's
I mean this particular episode is.
Oh, okay.
And in general. But anyway, I just wanna talk about this because I think it's funny. Donald Trump apparently believes that Colin Jost and Michael Che have colluded with Russia. That is literally what he tweeted almost word for word over the weekend. So here's the thing. I wanna set the stage for you.
Okay, please do.
This week, Saturday Night Live was a rerun. They didn't have an episode. But Don Trump, who is literally just a creation of TV, doesn't get how reruns work. And so when an episode that had a critical portrayal of him on it aired, a rerun, he lost his mind and accused them of breaking the law. So he tweeted, it's truly incredible that shows like Saturday Night Live, not funny, no talent, that's crazy. Have you seen Kate McKinnon? Come on, Cecily Strong, these are very funny women. Anyway, can spend all of their time knocking the same person, me, over and over, without so much of a mention of the other side, like an advertisement without consequences. Same with late night shows. Should FEC or FCC look into this? There must be collusion with the Democrats and, of course, Russia. Such one-sided media coverage, most of it fake news, hard to blah, blah, blah. And I just imagine like Pete Davidson like sitting down with like Vladimir Putin. Like, how are we gonna get him? I don't watch a lot of SNL.
So much confusion here. There is so much just like not like having like basic understanding of things. Like SNL is not the news. Mm-hmm. It's a comedy show. It's a variety show full of comedians.
Definitely not the news.
Who joke around. It's a funny show. It's supposed to be funny. And also he got really upset. He clearly didn't realize that this, I mean, to be fair, I mean, one more show wouldn't make any difference. They do kind of go in on him every weekend. But he clearly didn't realize that he's seen this one before. This is a rerun.
It was like 2 months ago.
Right.
And he tweeted about it at the time. Right. And he accused him of committing a crime.
It's also very current, too, every episode. So it could have been clear to just an average person who knows what's going on that this was a rerun.
Well, look, Alzheimer's is rough. Here's the thing, too. They portray virtually everybody in politics. And generally kind of negative. I generally think that their portrayal of AOC is a little bit condescending. And yes, they do talk about him a lot. But you know who else they talked about? Obama, constantly. I remember when The Rock played Obama. Bill Clinton, constantly. George H.W. Bush, constantly. You think George W. Bush liked the Will Ferrell portrayal of him on a weekly basis? This isn't some new thing. This isn't some Trump thing. This is what they always do. And I'm fairly certain it's not a product of their relationship with Russia.
The only difference is they don't have to write jokes now.
They just repeat what he said. Yeah, and I just want to briefly mention, so why are we talking about this? We're talking about this because Trump is talking about
federal investigation.
Yeah, he keeps doing that. I'm not as worried about that. Here is why he's talking about it.
Oh, okay.
He's talking about it because he spent his entire weekend attacking everyone he could think of so that he wouldn't have to attack the thing he obviously should be attacking this weekend, which is Islamophobes and white supremacists. Everybody, I think, noticed that while he had time to attack a bunch of old politicians and comedy shows and all that, white nationalism, white supremacy, that's a tiny thing. It's just a small group. You've got my thoughts and prayers. I have no thoughts whatsoever about the actual guy who did that, who cited me as his cultural hero, a symbol of renewed white identity in the world. Now, whether he thinks he's actually responsible for that or not, I would at least mention it. It seems weird that terrorists keep saying that they look up to you. Maybe you could talk about that. Maybe you could talk about the fact that in 2018, every extremist-related murder in the US was done by a right-winger, many of them white supremacists. That seems like a problem that would be worthy of talking about. But he can't do it because he's too busy talking about Colin Jost.
Yeah.
Anyway. Okay, we're gonna take a break. When we come back, lots more. Joining us now to break down the college admissions scandal that has rocked a number of different celebrities' families, as well as our confidence in higher education in general in the US, is former Assistant Chief Counsel of the Senate Watergate Committee and Assistant US Attorney in New York, David Dorson. Welcome to the Damage Report.
Thank you very much. Glad to be here.
Very glad to have you here. I'm looking to better understand this scandal. So from your point of view, how significant is this? Is this a story of 50 odd people, or does it spread farther than that?
Oh, it spreads much farther than that and in many directions. I've always called when in answer to affirmative action people who say that it's terrible, I say, look, this really real affirmative action scandal is affirmative action for the rich. And they get every break repeatedly. And this is just one more, perhaps the most outrageous example, because they are paying off to take spots from deserving students. It's just terrible.
So I'm also interested in how this all came together in terms of the investigation. So it seems like there's one particular witness that was pretty instrumental in putting this together. Without that witness, would we be hearing about this?
Possibly not, although apparently it was pretty well known around. But as a former prosecutor, you look for a break. And I don't know exactly how it started, but perhaps one of the parents, an honest parent, turned them in. It's much broader than the 50. I'm sure there are hundreds. I think he said there were 750 parents of wealthy people who were pushing their kids ahead of deserving students, some poor, some minorities, but all more deserving.
So, David, now outside of the confidential witness, because we know he already has taken a plea, but everyone else, because there's these celebrities involved and a lot of like really rich people, do you see anyone actually serving jail time from this?
I think the only jail time will be served if anyone tries to obstruct justice. I think that it's unlikely, and this, of course, is just a guess, that parents who paid off as and are first offenders, they may be fined, they will be put on probation. But I would be surprised, although not shocked, if they got jail time. But anyone who did anything more like obstruct justice or tell people to lie, something like that, I think their jail time is very deserved, and it may be deserved in other cases as well.
So in much of the conversation since this news broke, I've heard people talking about the fact that you have sort of two systems of influence through money. You have these particular people who are handing over tens or hundreds of thousands of dollars, which is obviously breaking the law. And then you have people who are able to have libraries built with their name on them and donate gigantic sums of money, which is perfectly legal under the current system. Do you think that this sort of hyper focus that we have right now on the people who are obviously breaking the law might cause us to start to question the more traditional non-bribe ways of getting, you know, giving money and getting access for your child?
Well, the second way is more complicated, because you need rich people to give money to charity and to universities. When they give a university, their children may benefit, but so do everyone else, does everyone else. And I think you have to be careful not to kill the goose that laid the golden egg, which is pretty literal in this case.
Okay, let's talk about another golden egg then, or a potential one at least. So we don't know for sure in any of these cases where a parent had their kid in, we don't know who lost access, who might have otherwise had that spot. But there are apparently at least a few parents who think that their kids might have been one of those. We already have one lawsuit filed, a parent who wants $500 billion because her son did not get into some of the schools that are named.
I think that was a class action, John. I think that was a class action, and $500 million may be applied to a larger group of people.
Okay, well, that certainly makes more sense. Do you think that there might be a case there? Maybe not at that particular number, but that parents whose kids were rejected in the same years where bribes were being handed over, do they have any case to be made that they could theoretically get money out of this?
Well, I think the first problem is that it doesn't make sense financially for one parent to sue. And they have a class action, but I don't think a class action will work here, because there are so many different patterns and universities that I think a court will throw out the class action. If a student could show with a reasonable degree of certainty that he was on the cusp of getting in, a court might well say, look, the university system caused the person to return down and will give the benefit of the doubt to the excluded student, and which makes sense.
I want to thank you for joining us on the show and breaking down some of the legal implications of where this case might go and some of the related cases. So thank you, David, for joining us.
Well, my pleasure, John. Thank you very much.
Thank you. We're going to take one more break. We come back, another story to get to after this. Welcome back to the show, everyone. So look, we know that not too long ago, there was the Coast Guard lieutenant who was apparently planning some sort of massive terror attack. Mm-hmm. So massive that he said he would try to kill literally everyone on the planet. And so look, extremism, white supremacy, those sorts of things in the military should not come as a shock to anyone at this point. I actually read a book years ago about a reporter who was embedded with the special forces in different branches of the military, and he found people talking in those sorts of terms. Not a lot of them, we're talking about a small minority, but still significant. And so it should not be shocking that a new report came out showing that a Discord group or a group that had a Discord chat server called Identity Europa apparently had members of the active duty armed forces participating in their chat. So that's two Marines, two Army ROTC cadets, an Army physician, a member of the Texas National Guard, and a member of the Air Force. All apparently were identified as belonging to that organization, which is listed by the ADL and the Southern Poverty Law Center as an extremist group. Huffington Post both confirmed their identity and then reached out to those branches of the military who did confirm that those were active members in those services. So look, the Discord chat had the sorts of speech that you would expect.
Right.
There's racist and anti-Semitic views. And that group generally has, in the past year or two, has tried to, or I guess a year and a half, because I'm gonna describe why, has limited themselves to sort of propaganda campaigns around campuses of posting literature and things like that. Now, they had been tied to that Unite the Right rally. Apparently, at least in the context of this Discord server, they've been attempting to differentiate themselves from those sorts of people. So they've tried to police the speech a little bit, but apparently in many cases it hasn't actually worked out, including members of the leadership of that group have said and posted things that are obviously incredibly objectionable.
You know, when I said earlier that this was shocking, you're right, this shouldn't be shocking. I think it's just reading some of the chats was just, you know, and one of the guys here allegedly, like, there's pictures of him posting some of the, I guess, like, posters from this white supremacist extremist group around town in Oklahoma City.
Yeah, and the funny thing is, like I'm glad that organizations like this are going on, and I think it was Unicorn Riot that did an investigation of going through chat logs and Huffington Post did some great work here. The thing is, like, this sort of normalization of what should be considered pretty extremist sort of stuff. Like, yeah, you can find that by going to Discord chats and 4chan, or you can follow Steve King on Facebook, where he posted over the weekend a thing about how if it comes to a civil war, our side has 8 trillion bullets and the other side doesn't know which bathroom to use. Saying, ha ha ha, we're going to gun down the other side if there's a civil war. He's a sitting congressman in the Republican Party.
Right.
So it really spans from the most public and highest profile sorts of environments to things that are relatively harder to see. And to the original point about how this is a significant problem, there was a poll in 2017 conducted by the Military Times found that nearly 25% of service members surveyed said they had encountered white nationalists within their ranks. 30% said that they saw white nationalism as a bigger threat to national security than the wars in Syria, Afghanistan, and Iraq combined. I mean, that is gigantic. And I know that there are people that are thankfully watching out for this. The problem is that the people inside the FBI who would normally be investigating this sort of organizing and looking out for people like the Coast Guard lieutenant have been defunded and deorganized by Donald Trump since he became president. Mm-hmm. So more reason to be worried about what might eventually come from this extremism inside of the ranks of the armed forces.
Right. And that's when we say it's institutional and it's systemic, like, it's things like that, because now you don't not only have to worry about, you know, how they would behave in a foreign country, but also with the people they're supposed to be protecting.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, and they're well trained. Mm-hmm. What are they going to do after they leave? And the thing is, too, this is focused on the military, but we should be equally or more worried about this in police forces as well. If there are people that are being radicalized and hold positions of authority and influence, armed positions of authority and influence in communities around the country, that should be a significant worry. And I am so glad that organizations like Huffington Post and that are trying to make this a thing that we're talking about. But it seems like a pretty big deal and relatively little conversation about it so far.
Yeah. I mean, because, you know, we could do this in the healthcare system. We could do this with teachers. There was a video I was talking to you about earlier. Like, it's, you know, it's
about a teacher who is screaming racial obscenities.
Someone who worked for a school system.
In Connecticut, yes.
Mm-hmm.
Screaming racial obscenities that just happened to be captured on tape.
Right.
And might have been doing that for a long time. And we didn't know about it until thankfully someone had their cell phone.
Right. People who approve mortgages at banks. You know, it trickles down everywhere.
Yeah. And thankfully some people at least are watching out for it. Well, thank you as always
for both making
the show happen and then being on the show as well.
Yes.
Doing double time there. Thank you to everybody who's been watching the show. We've got a gigantic week planned. Rokana's going to be back on the show as well as a number of other awesome guests. So much to get to. So we will see you tomorrow as we continue through this week. Thanks for listening to the full episode of The Damage Report. Support our work, listen ad-free, access members-only bonus content, and more by subscribing to Apple Podcasts at apple.co/TYT. I'm your host, John Adirola. I'll see you soon.